Chapter 32. Aaron stared hard at the golden substance bubbling and turning brown over the fire. It was cheese. Cheese on top of a tomato sauce spread evenly over a doughy base. With pepperoni. It had to be with pepperoni, or else there wouldn't be any point, would there? Aaron was a firm believer in pepperoni. She could take or leave pineapple, and she refused to acknowledge anchovies. These were the essential secrets of the universe, and this was the substance that made the world spin. Okay, maybe they weren't essential, but they were pretty important.
Oh, pizza.
Aaron breathed the word as she sensed the moment was now. She reached forwards and yanked the pizza off the metal rack over the fire, glad that she'd remembered to wear gloves this time.
Pizza!
It was glorious, perfectly round with a radius you could bite into with fluffy crust and generous toppings of both cheese and meat. None of that skimpy, bare-bones layer over the tomato sauce, thank you very much. Aaron slid the pizza onto the counter and grabbed a knife. She didn't have a pizza roller, but it was easy enough to cut into the traditional 8 slices. That, too, was essential. You couldn't have unevenly sized slices or someone might get stabbed. It was done. Aaron stared at her newest creation and felt her stomach rumble. But no, this wasn't for her. This was for her customers. As Aaron swept back into the common room, she enjoyed the sound of that word. Customer. She had some. But maybe that wasn't the word for the people sitting in her inn. Patron? No, that sounded awful.
Guest.
That was a good word. Aaron beamed as she sat her pizza down in front of the Drakes, who eyed the food suspiciously. She didn't know them, and that was glorious, too. She had guests that weren't friends. It didn't sound like much, but it was progress. For the last few days, Aaron had been getting gnolls, Drakes, and the odd human into her inn, and not just her friends and Pisces. She was making money, and with her newest creation, she was sure she was going to make even more.
Is this pizza?
One of the Drakes poked at a slice with a claw. Aaron nodded proudly.
Yep, it's really good. As good as a hamburger. Try it, you'll see.
One of the 3 Drakes who'd come to her inn for lunch looked at his companions. He shrugged and gingerly picked up a still steaming slice. He blew on it a few times and then nibbled it. His eyes widened and his tail twitched a bit. Aaron watched his face and his tail anxiously. Drakes were like dogs, and gnolls were even more like dogs. They could lie pretty well, but their tails always gave them away.
Lots of cheese. And chewy. Warm.
He bit deeper into the slice as his companions watched expectantly. Aaron held her breath. His tail twitched and then began to wag, just a bit. But when the Drake finished the rest of his slice and reached for another one, Aaron knew she'd done it again. Or rather, copied it again.
How is it?
The Drake chewed thoughtfully and then nodded in satisfaction.
Delicious. It quite suits our needs.
Aaron beamed, and the other Drakes nodded happily in approval. One picked up a slice, but rather than eat it, began to dissect it, examining the parts.
Melted cheese sauce from a tomato and rising dough. Extraordinary, but how delicious.
The third Drake nodded. He wasn't eating either, which was strange to Aaron, but he also inspected the pizza with great interest.
It seems easy to make. Simple recipe.
Tomatoes might be hard to come by. Not much call for them.
There will be. Put it in order and we'll have enough.
The first Drake nodded as he licked his claws.
Cheese and sauce base. The meat is good, but I can see sliced fish being equally appealing. I'll do a few prototypes.
Prototypes?
All three drakes froze and looked over at Erin. The second one gave her an unconvincing smile.
Well, we were just saying what an extraordinary recipe it is.
Oh, thanks? Are you some kind of cooks?
The third drake nodded. He stood and extended a claw to Erin. She shook it, still not quite sure what was going on.
Therese Hangclaw, at your service. I'm a chef at the Dancing Drake in Lisgore.
Oh, it's very nice to...
Erin paused as her mind caught up with what he'd said. She frowned at the third drake, who cringed as the other two glared at him.
Wait a second. What was that? You're a chef. Why are you here to...
One of the drakes hurriedly tossed down several silver coins on the table. His two companions rose, and they gathered up the slices of pizza and retreated toward the door.
Much appreciated, Miss Human, but we've got to go. Don't worry about the change.
They practically dashed out of the inn with the rest of the pizza. Erin watched them go, mouth gaping.
I've just been plagiarized! Again!
She stared at the table, at her coins, and at the open door. She felt she should be upset, but they'd left a lot of money for one pizza. But they'd taken the recipe, which wasn't hers, but it was still theft. The door began to swing closed, but someone caught it. Saria walked in, staring over her shoulder suspiciously.
Did I just see three drakes running away with a bunch of food in their arms?
It's called pizza, and they just stole my recipe!
Saria blinked at Erin. It was hard for the girl to explain, but the half-elf got the gist of what had happened after only a few seconds.
Ah, recipe thieves. It happens. The instant someone makes something worth eating, there's always a huge race for other famous chefs and cooks to find out how it was made and improve on the recipe. I suppose it's a sign of how well those hamburgers did that they were sticking around for you to come up with something else.
Yeah, but...
Erin gestured helplessly at the door as Saria helped her gather all the silver coins. Saria glanced out the door. The drakes hadn't yet made it to the city gates. They weren't exactly fast on their feet, especially as they tried not to drop the pizza slices.
Want me to hit him with a spell? I've got pretty good aim.
No. I just wish I'd had a day to sell my food before it got taken away. I guess they're going to earn a lot of money tonight.
Saria patted Erin sympathetically on the shoulder.
If it helps, I think people will know where the food came from. Next time, you should only bring out the new stuff when it's dinner time. That way you'll at least get one big crowd.
Erin sighed, and Saria offered her the handful of silver.
Don't worry about it. It's not like they're your only customers.
It was true. Erin had been happy with her increase in clientele, but they still weren't exactly the crowds that she'd seen in Pestless's inn.
I guess...
She took the silver coins and then hesitated. Erin looked over at Saria and smiled, forgetting about her stolen pizza recipe for just one second. She'd been looking forward to this all day.
Say, Saria, I'm running low on silver. Can you exchange a gold coin for me?
No problem.
Saria reached for her pouch and blinked as Erin handed her a shiny gold coin.
That was quick. You shouldn't keep your gold lying about.
Oh, I had one lying around.
Erin smiled mischievously at Saria. The half-elf frowned but reached for the coin.
Well, thanks anyway.
Saria paused and stared hard at the gold coin Erin handed her. Then her eyes slowly traveled over to one of the windows. There, the boxes full of fairy flowers were still blooming, golden and shining in the sunlight. Saria stared at the gold coin, and then narrowed her eyes at Erin. The human girl tried to keep her face straight as Saria peered hard at her.
A gold coin, huh? Well, I'm happy to accept one. Let me just...
Saria raised the coin up and tried to bend it with both fingers. She frowned.
Huh.
The half-elf hesitated and eyed Aaron's twitching face. Slowly, she raised it to her mouth and bit the gold coin. She eyed the faint marks her teeth had left in the soft gold.
It tastes like gold, but Aaron, is this an illusion or not?
It's fake! Isn't it so cool?
Aaron pointed to the flowers.
I just figured out how to make them turn into coins like the fairies did. See, if I pluck it and say, gold.
Aaron carefully broke a flower off by the stem and Saria blinked. Suddenly, Aaron was holding a second gold coin in her hand.
That's incredible, Aaron. I didn't even sense any magic. And these coins feel like gold. Real gold, too. Not the partially gold coins we use.
She frowned at the coin in her hand and hefted it slightly.
It weighs the same, feels the same, tastes and smells. Rot, that's good magic. Can you transform the flowers into anything else?
Aaron shook her head.
It doesn't seem to work with other things, really. But the coin feels real for an entire day. Then it turns back into a flower in the morning.
Saria eyed the bed of flowers speculatively. The blooms were growing quite fast, even in the winter, and already Aaron had seen a few more shoots poking their head out of the soil.
Looks like that fairy prank is more useful than it seems. Are you planning on doing anything with the flowers?
Aaron looked at her friend blankly.
Like what?
Oh, I don't know. Use them to buy something nice, perhaps?
Saria rolled the gold coin between her fingers. Aaron frowned.
Why would I do that? I mean, they'd find out, and it'd be stealing, right?
Saria coughed into one hand.
I know a few human shopkeepers that... Rot. Never mind. You're too nice.
Aaron laughed. Saria tossed the coin back on the table and unfolded her arms.
But seriously, Aaron, those flowers might be useful, but your new recipes are just as valuable. Be careful about letting people run off with them, okay?
Aaron nodded meekly. She'd chatted with Saria for a bit longer before the half-elf trooped upstairs to rest and practice some spells. Aaron sighed as she went back into the kitchen. She put the gold coin on a counter next to her silver ones and sighed twice as she stared at the empty pan. Another day up, another day down. It wasn't as if it had been a particularly bad one so far. It was just that Aaron felt like she was missing something. Someone, perhaps. She wondered where Ryoko was. She missed being able to talk to her. And as for the recipe... Shaking her head, Aaron flipped the coin into the air and caught it. It really was amazing, but it wasn't useful. She plonked the coin back onto the counter. After a minute, she mumbled into the silence.
Besides, I probably wouldn't get away with it.
Hallrock was in a foul mood, and he didn't bother trying to hide it. Not that that was particularly surprising to his teammates. The scout was usually grumpy at the best times. But right now, he was sitting in an inn, and contrary to most people's preferences, Hallrock preferred to be outdoors sitting in the rain or sloughing through mud than indoors. Part of that was because of the company he had to share. Gold rank parties were often highly selective as to the people they recruited. New adventurers went through a thorough vetting process, but even the best parties usually had their moments of friction. In this case, friction was a daily state of being between Hallrock, Revy, and Typhenius. Ulrian was their silent leader, and usually didn't get into their arguments. But Hallrock made no effort to hide his feelings about his new teammates, and Revy and Typhenius were typical mages through and through.
Calm down, Hallrock.
Ulrian said it, but Hallrock had been adventuring longer than his captain, and he'd known Ulrian back when the other man had been a bronze rank adventurer. Holrock glared at his captain and moderated his tone only slightly.
I'm telling you, we shouldn't be here. It's a waste of corn, especially if all we do is sit on our asses.
Revy frowned at Holrock, and Typhonius barely looked up from his spellbook, but he spoke in a bored voice.
We don't have much to do but sit while we look for someone to dig out those ruins. I don't see what the problem is, Holrock.
The scout gritted his teeth.
The problem is that we're not doing anything while other adventurers could be getting the drop on us.
He pointed out of their private room. Griffin Hunt had been seated in this expensive side room in the inn, ostensibly as a mark of respect for their rank and the amount of gold they were paying to the innkeeper, but also he suspected to keep them out of the sight of the regular clientele of Drake's.
That damn Drake seems to delight in serving us all the local recipes. With what we're paying him, we should be eating whatever we want.
Revy raised her eyebrows. Then tell him to make your local specialty or whatever, Holrock. But stop crouching because we can't find anyone to dig.
How well, there are no miners in this entire damn city. There are, but they're all Antinium. If we hire them...
Typhonius broke off as Ulrian shook his head and Holrock growled.
I'm not working with those monsters. Besides, the half-seekers have tried and had no luck. Well then, until we either decide to call out some people from Esselm or pick up a spade ourselves, I think we're stuck here. Come on, sit back and have a pint.
Holrock shook his head and stood up.
I've had enough of sitting in that inn waiting for something to happen. I'm going to look for some diggers or miners again. I'll be back tonight or tomorrow.
None of his comrades stopped him. Ulrian went back to reading, Typhonius did likewise, and Revy made another attempt at downing the bottle of wine she'd bought. Holrock shook his head as he stomped out of the inn, completely ignoring the Drake innkeeper who half-heartedly tried to persuade him to sit and have a drink. Holrock walked through the streets, avoiding the crowds and trying to find his way through the unfamiliar territory. That was another thing. He was a scout. He could fight in cities, but it didn't mean he enjoyed trying to find his way through streets where everything was written in the Drake's language and incomprehensible to him. He scowled as he passed by a group of laughing Drakes. They fell silent as he walked past, which only caused Holrock's scowl to deepen. This entire quest for the dungeon's treasure, if there even was a dungeon, was pointless. He never should have let Orion talk him into this. Griffin Hunt was wasting time and money here when they could be doing good somewhere else. Plus, Holrock hated this city. He didn't like Drakes much. Holrock had spent too much time fighting them off and on over the years as a soldier to trust them. The same went for Knowles, and... as for the Antinium, the scout's gaze darkened as he saw one of the workers scuttling down the street. He could never trust one of them. They were all heartless monsters. He turned away in disgust. Even if he'd ever consider hiring the Antinium, and there was little chance of that, he'd heard they were refusing to dig even for other adventuring groups. Self-serving, useless.
Oh, hey, you're that scout guy.
Holrock stopped and turned. A young woman was approaching him down the street. A human. He recognized her, but dimly. Where had he... oh, the inn. She was the owner of the undead skeleton. The scout debated walking off, but at least she didn't have scales, fur, or chitin. He tried to remember her name. Solstice...
Good evening, miss.
Hey, how are you doing? Sorry about the other day. You're... Hall...
Holrock.
The scout tried not to frown at her, or glare, or do any of the 100 things which he had been told he shouldn't do when talking to people. But the young woman had an energetic enthusiasm about her, and, more importantly, the ability to completely ignore Hallrock's own dour mood.
Hallrock, right! I'm Erin Solstice. We, met when you were trying to kill my skeleton. I threw a rock at you.
I remember.
Right. Sorry about that.
It's nothing.
What did she want? Hallrock looked around. He had no idea where to find a guild for miners, if there even was one. He could start asking around, but that was likely to be a fruitless endeavor.
So, how are you doing?
Hallrock looked back at Erin in mild surprise. He wasn't used to people continuing to engage him in conversation.
Nothing in particular. Why?
Oh, no reason. I mean, I heard your party was staying at an inn, but I'm always looking for customers, and I made this great new food, so I was wondering if you'd like to try it. At my inn, I mean.
The older man blinked down at Erin a few times. He opened his mouth to refuse, and then hesitated. It wasn't an issue of money that made him pause. He had more than he could spend when it came to drinks and food as a gold rank adventurer, but he was on a mission. And yet, the idea of interviewing a bunch of unfriendly drakes and gnolls lost a lot of its appeal when he considered sitting by himself in her inn. It was certainly better than the other drake's inn, where the large innkeeper would be constantly laughing and talking with a raised voice and getting on Hallrock's nerves.
How full is your inn?
My inn?
Suddenly, the young woman looked wary. She scuffed at the paving stones.
Well, there might be a few people, but even if there's not, I'm great company.
She didn't expect the smile that appeared on Hallrock's face, but then neither did he. An empty inn? Perfect. He was a scout and used to isolation, and it beat having that fat drake waddling around all the time. What was his name? Pestless? Hallrock shook his head, but he accepted the girl's offer.
Just give me a table in the corner, and I'll be fine.
The girl beamed at him and led him towards her inn. Hallrock followed, bemused, as she chattered to him the entire time. Erin Solstice seemed to have no trouble carrying on a conversation by herself. But to his surprise, he found himself talking to her after a bit.
If money is an issue, why not become an adventurer?
Really? You think I'd be good at it? I'm not a killer.
Hallrock shrugged uncomfortably as he walked through the snow with her. It had been a long time since he'd chatted with anyone who was female and not part of his team. It was a nostalgic, slightly bittersweet experience.
You picked a fight with a gnoll warrior and won, bare-handed. That's as good as any bronze rank, adventurer, and your skeleton is dangerous.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Is it, alive?
Hallrock had pierced the undead creature's skull with an arrow, but he had seen it walking around after the battle was over.
What? Torin? He's fine. But you know, it's weird. I think he had some kind of gemstone in his head. This red gem that I got after these undead attacked my inn. It made his eyes purple, but even after it broke, his eyes haven't changed back. How weird is that?
As far as Hallrock was concerned, the skeleton was a walking mystery that he desperately wanted to solve by grinding its bones into dust. But he held his tongue. He didn't understand the comment about the undead, but that did explain the skeleton's gaze that seemed to emit fear.
Who knows?
I don't. Oh, here's the inn.
They'd come to it surprisingly quickly. Hallrock watched Erin open the door and usher him inside. There she seated him in a table near one corner of the room as he'd requested, but she was almost as bad as pestless. She pestered him with questions, offering him a glass of warm milk, and then hovered around him as she gave him a menu with very few options, only two or three of which he actually recognized as food.
"Can I interest you in our newest dish?"
Holrock hesitated. His first response was a curt no, but it was a hard thing to say to the innkeeper's friendly expression.
"What is it?"
"Pizza!"
Holrock had never heard of pizza, but he listened to the girl's description of what it was and decided he could always claim he was sick. But cheese layered over tomato sauce and bread? It didn't sound that good. It didn't look that good to Holrock either when the innkeeper came out with it. He eyed the slices of pizza and touched it experimentally. Some kind of open-faced sandwich? Sensing the girl's eyes on him, Holrock reluctantly took a bite. It wasn't as bad as he expected, and the tomato sauce oozed into his mouth as he chewed on the melted cheese and dough. No, it wasn't bad at all. Had he been a soldier on a cold night huddled around a campfire, Holrock imagined he would have loved this food. As it was, there were far worse things to eat for dinner, and Holrock hated wasting food. He took another bite and decided that the pizza was warm and filling. That was when the door opened and a girl stomped in.
"A barmaid!"
she screeched at Aaron as she hurled a bunch of sticks to the ground. Holrock half turned with his hand on his dagger, but this new girl's anger was directed solely at Aaron Solstice. He watched as she stormed up to the other young woman and realized this was the girl he'd helped save. Perhaps it had been a mistake. Holrock winced as the blonde girl raised her voice another octave and shouted at Aaron, who was wearing a fed-up expression.
"What is it now, Lion?"
"Lionette! And I just leveled up as a barmaid!"
"That's good, isn't it? And hold on, why did you level up? I told you to get firewood."
The girl named Lion, or possibly Lionette, hesitated, and Holrock rolled his eyes. He could see dampness on her thick winter clothes, and the girl even had snow caught between the folds of her clothing. She'd probably been taking a nap while she ran the errand. It was a miracle something hadn't found and eaten her while she slept.
"I may have... That is not important! I am a noble! I will not be sullied with a commoner's class!"
Aaron's brows snapped together, and she began to argue with Lion as Holrock grunted to himself and tried to turn off his ears. The girl was a noble? A runaway, or an impoverished one, perhaps? That explained a lot. Holrock had already heard people in Liscor grumbling about the human thief, and she looked and acted like many of the jumped-up aristocrats he'd had the misfortune of encountering. He decided he didn't like her, and proceeded to ignore the girl's argument with Aaron as he reached for another slice of pizza. Somehow, the platter was empty, and Holrock was looking into an empty mug by the time Aaron won the argument. The angry red-haired girl suddenly gathered up her bundle of firewood and flounced into the kitchen. Aaron came back over to smile apologetically at Holrock and refill his mug.
"Sorry, she's new."
He grunted and waved a hand. Now that his belly was full, Holrock was tempted to leave for his bed, but he doubted he'd be able to sleep just yet. Instead, he eyed his mug. Warm water was all very well, but...
"Alcohol? I've got some, I think."
Aaron blinked at Holrock a few times as if she was taken aback by his request, but she dutifully went behind her counter and exclaimed in surprise.
"Hey, look! A keg! I wonder what's in it!"
As unwelcome as that statement was, it wouldn't be the worst thing Holrock had heard when being served drinks. The girl came back with a mug full of too much foam, but with the promising amber liquid at the bottom.
"Thanks."
He took a sip and tried to hide a grimace. Aaron glanced at Holrock as he took another gulp. This time his face didn't change, but hers fell.
You don't like it.
Holrock was starting to dislike this young woman's ability to read his expression. He shrugged and tried to pick his words carefully, which, it had to be said, wasn't his strong suit.
It's fine.
He'd grown spoiled after becoming a successful adventurer. Holrock had drunk worse swill before, even if this keg tasted as if someone had watered the ale quite heavily.
No, no, it's not.
Erin waved her hands about in distress while Holrock saw Lion sneaking upstairs, probably to take another nap.
Oh, I knew I shouldn't have bought the cheapest kind.
She rushed around looking for another keg while Holrock debated whether it was worth drinking more just so he could get drunk or cutting his losses and leaving now. But oddly, he was feeling relaxed, despite the oddness of this inn. Maybe it was just because he was around humans, or maybe it was just Erin. She asked constant questions without reserve, but she didn't pry or judge like other people.
Aha! I've got it!
Holrock looked over and saw the girl standing by a windowsill. She was picking at something, a box set on a table illuminated by the sunlight. Holrock's enhanced vision had no problems picking out the golden flowers Erin was gathering up and squeezing into a mug? The girl was crushing the flowers and gathering up the few drops of nectar into a mug. Then she added more ale, even more sloppily this time, so that there was just as much foam as liquid. She brought over the dubious concoction to Holrock and shoved it in his face.
Here, try this. It's a special drink.
What's in those flowers?
I don't know.
Holrock looked at Erin, and she hurried to explain.
They're magic flowers, and when you drink the nectar, you get sort of drunk. And I mean, it might go well with alcohol. Spice it up, you know? I've got this skill, Wondrous Fair, and it was telling me that this would work.
Holrock had never heard of that skill, but Erin looked at him pleadingly, and it wasn't as if he had anything better to do, or drink. He sniffed at the mug suspiciously. It seemed unlikely the innkeeper would try to poison or drug him, but he was always cautious. None of his skills were warning him of anything, though, so he took a cautious sip, and the wind ruffled Holrock's hair. He glanced around and wondered where the girl had gone, but in the next moment, he forgot about her, because he realized where he was. Home. Not the burnt wreck that was all that remained in the real world, but home. The home Holrock had known all his life before it had been taken away. He was standing on a green hilltop in the midst of a fall day, the trees around him full of color, the air crisp and fresh. Below him, his small hamlet bustled with life and motion as farmers went about their chores and children helped chase animals or play together in the street. Holrock looked down and saw his arms. Young skin, unblemished by scars and not yet tanned or covered with hair, shone in the sunlight. He was a lad of 17 again, and he felt as if his body were like air, full of youthful strength and energy.
Holrock, what are you doing?
His heart skipped a beat. Holrock turned and saw Ariel. She was wearing the soft white cotton robe of the Harvest Maiden, given to the most beautiful girl in the village, and she was standing on the hilltop with him, smiling at him. It hadn't been like that. Holrock remembered this day, when she'd been standing with Telfar instead, laughing with him while Holrock looked on miserably. But this moment was different, and Holrock knew she was in love with him, and he'd been in love with her all his life, right up until the day she died with the others. And now she was here with him.
Halrach laughed and flung his arms around Ariel, swinging her around in the air like he'd always dreamed of doing. She clung to him and kissed his face as they tumbled around on the green hilltop, free and light, together for one perfect day. The young man turned and saw his small village below him bustling with life and people after the harvest. He could see his father laughing together with his mother as he lifted a huge bundle of grain on one shoulder and she carried a bucket of milk inside their house. He pointed, and Ariel turned and saw the first pies being brought out and set on the long table for all to eat. She tugged at his hand, and he followed, stumbling and laughing as he...
Erin had never considered herself a murderer, but it was clear she had a talent for killing people. This was an issue she felt she should think seriously about at some point, but right now, all she could think of was that she'd made yet another huge mistake.
Please wake up! Please wake up!
She shook Halrach desperately, rattling the older man back and forth as he sat in his chair, staring at nothing. She'd already prized the mug from his hands. He'd kept sipping at it, even while he went into whatever trance he was in, but he was still out of it.
Come on, it's only a drink, just a few flowers. Oh, more than a few. It's not a drug if it's magic, and you're not overdosing or whatever. Oh, come on, wake up!
Erin wondered if she should slap Halrach. That never seemed to work. Water, then. She looked around, gave up, and threw the non-fairy flower drink in his face. Halrach blinked as the alcohol splashed over him. He coughed, spluttered, and looked around.
Ariel? What?
I'm so sorry, Halrach. I didn't know that would happen. I thought you'd just think you were suddenly big, like in the stories, but the alcohol did something. It's a drug. I'll throw it out.
Erin seized the mug, but Halrock's hand moved and he was suddenly gripping her hand. The usually dour-faced adventurer stared at Erin with such intensity she was frightened.
It's not a drug. It's memory. Give me another drink, please. I'll pay anything.
No, it's dangerous. You went all blank stare on me. I shouldn't give it to anyone. Not until I've tested.
The two fought over the mug. Halrach was stronger than Erin, but he was at a bad angle and trying not to spill the drink. At this point, Erin was trying to upend it on the floor. They engaged in a silent match until someone spoke right behind them.
Erin, is he bothering you?
Both Halrach and Erin froze. Erin turned her neck and saw Saria. The half-elf had walked up behind the two, and her skeletal hand was glowing with magic. She wasn't quite pointing her glowing finger at Halrock's face, but her expression was grim. Halrach and Erin exchanged a glance, and both realized that Saria had entirely the wrong idea of what was happening. Slowly, Halrach let go of Erin, and she stepped back.
It's nothing, Saria. I gave him a drink with that nectar in it, you know, from the flowers.
Oh?
Saria hesitated, but her fingers stopped glowing. Erin tried to explain, and the half-elf sighed in what sounded like relief.
Oh, of course that's what would happen. Well, good.
She nodded to Halrach, and he nodded back. The older man looked at Erin and bowed his head.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have given you that drink without testing it on Pisces first. My skill just told me to do it, and sorry. Would you like anything else, Halrach? Anything? Anything but a certain fairy drink which I'm not sure I'm ever going to serve again?
He hesitated. The gold rank adventurer still looked shaken, and Erin saw him pass a hand over his face several times before he looked at her.
Food, yes.
How about a hamburger?
Fine. I'll have that and as much ale as you've got.
Nervously, Erin took the mug of ale with the fairy flower nectar in it back into the kitchen and started cooking while Saria took a seat next to her in the kitchen.
I had no idea that would happen. But he seemed so gone.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. He said it was memory. Saria rubbed at her chin as Erin flipped two patties, distractedly cooking while she talked. The half-elf eyed the half-empty mug, but didn't make a move for it.
I'm no expert, Erin, but it seems like those flowers are part of the Frost Fairy's illusion. You can make them look like gold coins, and you said you felt like a giant when you sipped some. Perhaps they're enchanted with illusions that make us see what we want to.
Oh, so Holrock was seeing what he wanted to? He said a name. I think it was a girl's.
Saria shrugged.
I don't know, but it's rare for him to lose his cool.
Wait a second, you know Holrock? You never said.
Know him? Only by reputation. He's a veteran gold rank adventurer, Erin. He founded Griffin Hunt with Ulrian nearly a decade ago, and he's famous for never panicking or breaking under stress. That drink of yours must be powerful stuff if it got him.
Erin frowned at the drink as her hands mechanically slapped a burger together.
I didn't mean to do anything bad. I just listened to my skill.
That's not always the wisest move. In any case, I don't think what you did was wrong. If anything, I think he'll pay in gold if you give him more of that stuff.
Maybe.
Erin didn't know, but she took the hamburger out to Holrock, who accepted it and a non-magical drink with a grunt. Saria and Erin had a meal of another hamburger. Erin was too rattled to make a pizza at the moment, on the other side of the inn. After about an hour of talk, during which Holrock just ate his food and stared at his arms and hands as if he were still in that trance, the door to the inn opened and two more familiar guests walked in.
Good evening, Erin.
Pa nodded to Erin as she turned and beamed at him, and a familiar drake poked his head in as well.
Hi, Erin. Fancy meeting you here.
Saria snorted as Olesim edged his way in behind Pawn. Holrock had frozen in his seat, but Erin welcomed both Drake and Antinium in, seating them in the center of the room.
Pawn! Olesim! I haven't seen either of you two for ages! Why haven't you stopped by?
Pawn nodded his head while Olesim stared over Erin's shoulder.
I am sorry, but I was busy within our hive attempting to make more individuals, and until recently, I was being interviewed by Kisimver and the Queen.
Whoa, that's big stuff!
It is indeed. Olesim was with me until I suggested we eat here for the night.
Erin looked at Olesim, and the drake scratched at his head spines and looked the other way.
I didn't know you were in the hive. That's cool. Are you teaching the Antinium? And why haven't you come by earlier? You know I'm always up for a game of chess.
Olesim waffled as he avoided looking straight at Erin.
You know how it is, Erin.
No, I don't.
He faltered, looking over at Saria for support. The half-elf just rolled her eyes as she bit into her second hamburger.
Well, it's just that I wanted to try playing other players, and the Antinium are always willing to play and even pay me for their time. And I know you're busy, and I wouldn't want to take away from...
His eyes flicked left, and Erin looked over and saw her magical chessboard, the pieces sitting ghostly and transparent on the wood. She'd left a game unfinished with her mystery opponent, as he'd had to stop for some reason. Erin frowned in confusion, and then glared at Olesim.
Now wait just one minute, Olesim. Even if I play someone else, I'm happy to play you. Even if you're not as good as he is yet, you're still a great player.
The drake shook his head.
I know how good I am, Erin. And after that game with him, I wouldn't want to hold you back, really.
Hey!
Aaron seized Olesim and glared at the surprised Drake.
How good you are shouldn't have anything to do with being allowed to play the game. Anyone can play chess, and you should play me as much as you want. That's the only way you're going to get better, and...
She glared at Pawn, who shrank back in his seat.
And I don't mind teaching new players, either. I like chess. Anyone who likes chess is welcome to play me, anytime, anywhere. Well, not anywhere, but most of the time I'm up for a game.
Olesim blinked at Aaron, but as her glare transitioned into a smile, he managed one too.
I'm sorry, Aaron. You're right. I don't know what I was thinking. Of course I'd love to play.
Good. In that case, I'll play you and Pawn at the same time. I'd love to play a dual game. Just let me feed you two first. Hey, do you want to try some pizza?
What's pizza?
It's...
Olesim?
The Drake's head turned. His eyes widened, and Aaron blinked in surprise.
Zavara? What are you doing here?
The captain of the watch and tall Drake with an attitude and flame for breath walked slowly into the inn. She nodded awkwardly at Aaron.
Human, is your inn open at the moment?
What? Oh, yeah, it is. Do you want to eat here? Or drink something?
Aaron hesitated. She'd never seen Zavara in a non-shouting context, and she was totally off guard. But the Drake captain looked at Olesim and looked almost as unsure as Aaron.
I suppose I could have something. I just came by because I'm off duty, and I saw you walking this way, Olesim. Do you mind if I join you?
Me?
Olesim glanced at Saria for some reason. The half-elf shrugged, again for reasons Aaron couldn't understand, and Zavara looked at her.
Springwalker?
Zavara? I'm sure Olesim wouldn't mind if we shared a table, would he?
What? Me? No, I just thought I'd play a game of chess.
We can do that later. You should talk, Olesim.
Aaron beamed and the Drake sagged as the two women sat next to him. Pawn politely offered his chair to Saria, and the half-elf took a seat on Olesim's left, while Zavara took a seat on his right. Now that she had multiple guests, Aaron remembered Lion and looked around for her, but the newly leveled barmaid was nowhere to be seen.
Every time I need someone to serve drinks and food, it's not even that hard. I do all the cooking.
I'll go find her if you want.
Olesim stood up, but Aaron hurriedly waved him back down.
Oh, she's probably hiding or something. I'll get Torin to look after her when he comes back. I'm not sure where he is. No, you sit. I'm sure Olesim would like the company.
The Drake had the oddest expression on his face. Meanwhile, Saria started talking quite friendly with Zavara, and the captain seemed just as polite. Aaron smiled. It was good to see both getting along so well, although Olesim was very quiet. Aaron bustled around the kitchen, getting food ready, while the others talked or sat in silence. There was quite a lot of that, despite the full table. Olesim must have been hungry, because he looked incredibly relieved when Aaron came back with two hot pizzas, one on each glove. Pa nodded in appreciation, but paused as he glanced at Saria and Zavara. The two hadn't even looked at the pizza. They were smiling at each other and laughing, although Aaron must have missed the joke.
I believe I would like to play a game, Aaron, if you're free.
Totally. Just holler if you need anything, okay?
Saria and Zavara nodded without looking her way. Olesim hesitated and then slowly pushed back his chair.
I guess I'll play...
Sit!
He sat. Aaron found a table closer to Hallrock and sat at it with Pawn. The scout hadn't asked for much more than a refill, and he nursed his drink quietly while she talked with the Antinium. Aaron arranged the chessboard as Pawn sat in his chair, chewing quietly on a piece of pizza. She wasn't sure if he liked it, but she hadn't found any more bugs for the Antinium to eat, so she just prayed it was edible for them.
Okay, would you like to be black or white, Pawn?
I shall choose white, if it is acceptable to you, Aaron.
She nodded happily, and Pawn studied the board for a minute before moving a pawn up to d4. Aaron immediately moved a pawn up to d5, and Pawn moved a second pawn up to c5, initiating the queen's gambit. Aaron immediately pushed a second pawn into Slav defense c6, and there the game paused for a moment. Pawn studied the board, and then, unusually, looked up at Aaron. Normally, the Antinium was concentrated totally on the game, so this change made Aaron stop pondering chess strategy for a moment and look at him.
Something wrong, Pawn? Is the pizza no good?
The pizza is perfectly fine, Aaron, but I have something I wish to talk to you about.
Aaron frowned.
Oh? What's that?
Pawn placed a hand over a chess piece and hesitated. He looked directly at Aaron again, and she started to sense that he hadn't come to her inn to play chess after all.
I came here to ask for your advice, Aaron.
Pawn lowered his voice as Olesim began to try to teach both Zavara and Saria the game of chess. Aaron stared at the Antinium, concerned.
Why? What happened? I mean, is something wrong?
Nothing. Well, I suppose that is not accurate. Today I was summoned before my queen, as I said, along with four other Antinium, the four that became individual.
Oh.
That sounded big to Aaron. She still didn't quite understand why individuals were so important to the Antinium, but she'd gotten a vague idea of Pawn's new significance. He nodded to her as he slowly moved a piece forwards.
Yes, she called us and asked us questions about our nature. She, analyzed us for what we might be, what we might achieve.
Aaron stared at the board. Pawn had moved a pawn forwards again, only it was a terrible move. C4 to C5? That was bad Slav. She'd taught him to avoid that. Aaron looked at Pawn in confusion and, for the first time, noticed that something was different about Pawn today. He looked smaller. The Antinium sat hunched over in his seat, and Aaron realized he looked much like she'd first seen him. That was to say, like a normal worker. Meek, inconspicuous, unnoticed.
Pawn?
What had happened? What had his queen said to him? Done to him? Aaron remembered Kissimver, but Pawn didn't look hurt. He just looked helpless. Aaron looked at the board and then abandoned her game. She looked at Pawn seriously.
What happened? What did she do to you?
He shook his head slowly.
Questions. That is all she asked of us. Questions.
What kind of questions?
Questions could be bad and hurtful, but Pawn only raised one hand, palm up, helplessly.
Questions we could not answer, Aaron. She asked us what being individual meant, how it happened. We could not answer, and she asked more questions. What will we become? What classes can we take? How can we serve the hive?
He shook his head.
She asked if I would lead soldiers to battle, me, because I have gained a class from playing chess. I am highest level besides Kaelbkach. But me?
Aaron looked at Pawn. She couldn't imagine him fighting like Kaelbkach or Kissimver. An image flashed in her mind, a memory. She saw a worker flailing at goblins, fighting like a child as they stabbed him. Pon continued to speak, haltingly. His voice was strained with an emotion she'd never heard from an Antinium before.
I told her that I loved this game. I enjoy playing chess, but I cannot lead armies. I have a tactician class, but I have stopped leveling.
Erin blinked. Pon nodded at her.
It is problematic. Yet I have no desire to carry out another occupation. I cannot go back to being a worker, but not even my queen knows what we are now.
He spread his hands, knocking over pieces on the board. Pon jerked in surprise and then clumsily reached for the pieces, but he abandoned them and looked at Erin.
I am lost. If I am not a worker, what am I?
I don't know. Pon.
He shook his head.
My queen did not know. You do not know. No one knows. Not even us.
He stared at Erin, and she felt helpless. Pon's expression didn't change, but it couldn't. Not really. He had no nose or skin or even tear ducts, but his mandibles clicked together softly and his hands clenched on the table.
We are all lost, but I am the first, and so they look to me, and I...
Pon glanced up at Erin and then away.
I do not know.
Pon, it's not something you can figure out right away. Stuff like this is complex. It takes time.
Erin reached out to touch Pon's hand, but he knocked hers away. He stared at Erin, trembling slightly.
I asked them to go to you that night. I gathered the workers and told them to fight and die.
Erin felt a hole open up in her stomach. Pon stared into her eyes, his multifaceted ones direct, full of hidden emotion.
I asked them to go. They did it willingly, but I was the one who suggested it, who told them to do it. Not my queen, not Isimur or Kilbich. I and no other.
She remembered. Erin's eyes were stinging, but she made herself look at Pon.
They saved me, Pon.
He nodded.
Yes, and it was necessary. It was good. But what happens next?
What?
Erin didn't understand. Pon looked at her, as if willing her to.
They died to save you. It was well. But what will become of those dead? When Bird, Geri, Belgrade, and Anand and I die, who will remember the fallen? They lived. Magnus, Rook, Calibrian, Vladimir, Emmanuel. They lived. But only we remember. Only we care.
Erin stared at Pon. This was beyond her. So far beyond her. But Pon had come to her for help. Only, what help could she give? What advice could she give someone on a road no one had walked on before?
I don't know, Pon. I'm sorry.
The Antinium sat in his chair, shivering. No, not shivering. Erin looked at him more closely. He was twitching, shaking. It was just like when Erin had first asked him his name, only more violent now.
What will we do, Erin? What will we become?
His voice. Erin felt a cold chill run down her back, but she refused to move back. She looked at Pon. He stared back.
What are we?
A faint sound made Erin look away from Pon. Olesum, Saria, and Zavara hadn't noticed his behavior, but Hallrock had. He was holding something in his left hand, a dagger. Erin looked at him and shook her head slightly. He stared at Pon, his face grim, and his eyes flicked to her. She stared into his eyes, just stared. Slowly, Hallrock sheathed his blade. Aaron turned back to Pawn. He was still shaking. She put a hand on his shoulder.
Hey, listen to me. You're not alone. There are others like you.
None are like me.
It was true, but not true. Something stirred in Aaron's memory. She looked at Pawn, the first of his kind, the leader of a people who no one trusted, who were unimportant, who didn't know. Memory flickered in Aaron's mind. Not recent memory, but stories, fragments of something she'd heard long ago in a quiet place as a child. Perhaps it was the last name Pawn had spoken, Emmanuel, but Aaron remembered, and so she pushed aside the chessboard and edged her chair closer next to Pawn. She put one hand on his cool chitin.
You know, there was once a guy like you. He wanted to save his people, too.
Really?
His voice was calming down. Aaron smiled at Pawn and sensed Hallrock's eyes on her back.
Yeah. In fact, I know a story about this guy. He was famous, you know? His name is Moses, and a lot of human kids know about him.
What did he do? Who was he?
He was a normal person. Well, not normal, but he didn't think he'd do anything special until the day he realized he was different than the people around him. And he realized he had a people who were being mistreated, who were in need, and he led them.
That was sort of true. Sort of, depending on which story you listened to, which movie you watched. Aaron had never watched The Ten Commandments, but she had seen The Prince of Egypt more than once.
His people were slaves. They were ruled by a harsh king, a pharaoh. But Moses was called, and so he led his people to freedom.
Pawn cocked his head at her. His voice returned to its normal pitch.
Is this an instructional story or a historical narrative?
Aaron paused. She scratched her head and smiled.
I don't know. It's just a story. Would you like to hear it?
He hesitated and then nodded. So Aaron told him a story from childhood.
Once upon a time, in a place named Egypt, there were two peoples. Both were humans, but they were different. One people were called Egyptians, and they had slaves. And the slaves were called Hebrews. And the king of the Egyptians was called the Pharaoh, but he was afraid that the Hebrews would rise up one day. So he ordered every baby boy to be killed. And Moses' mother didn't want that to happen. So she found a river, the River Nile, and put Moses in a basket. Then waited until someone found Moses. It was the Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him into the Pharaoh's house, so Moses grew up as an Egyptian prince when he was really a Hebrew. But one day, he discovered who he truly was. It was when he found a burning bush.
Aaron told the story of Moses, abridged and slightly inaccurately, but from start to finish. Pawn listened quietly until she was done, but when he finished, he just shook his head at her.
It is a good story, but I fear it is not as easy for us. The Antinium are not slaves to our queen. She is part of the hive, as are we all. It is just that there is no place for us now, and our purpose...
He broke off, shaking his head harder.
Rebellion would only lead to death. Senseless death.
Aaron waved her hands hurriedly and nearly knocked over her chessboard.
Oh, no. I didn't mean the queen was like the pharaoh. It's just a story, a parable. I was just saying that Moses was like a leader, and you're like a leader.
He paused.
It is a good story. But I am no chosen one. Moreover, you say this Moses was chosen by a god. You speak of gods, but I am told the gods are dead.
Aaron hesitated.
Maybe. I mean, here it seems like that's true, but I always grew up knowing there was a god. Then later, where I'm from, people believe there are gods. People believe they came to Earth, like Jesus Christ.
Jesus? Is that another human who led his people?
It sounded odd to hear an Antinium speak of Jesus. Aaron had to smile.
Yeah, you could say that. He was someone who saved his people. Actually, he saved the Hebrews, just like Moses, just after a long time had passed. And he was the Son of God. Well, depending on who you ask.
Pawn stared at Aaron. Across the room, Holrock's head slowly lifted, and he looked over at Aaron. He raised his voice, and both Antinium and Innkeeper looked over.
The gods are dead. Everyone knows that. But I've never heard of a descendant of gods.
Everyone says it where I come from.
Aaron realized she was on the edge of what Ryoka had warned her about, but it was too late to go back.
We have gods, or one god. There are more, but the one I was told about when I was young, I mean, people just call him God, or it God, her God, it's hard to explain.
Holrock eyed Aaron dubiously, but he actually moved his chair closer.
Explain that. I've always known the gods are dead, always, and I've never heard of one just called God.
Explain Christianity? Aaron wasn't sure, but now Pawn was looking at her too, and he'd stopped shaking, so she took a breath and tried.
God created the earth and everything in it in 7 days and did all this stuff, you know, God stuff. He cast out humans from paradise because we were sinful and, let the world work for a long time. But his people, his chosen people, I mean, he always watched over. That story of Moses, that was one example of how God chose his prophets and messengers to help save them.
After they became slaves,
Holrock snorted decisively.
Some god.
Aaron had nothing to say to that, but she felt like she owed the religion a tiny bit of defense.
Well, he did save them eventually. I think it was sort of like a punishment for something. Maybe. Anyways, later he sent his only son to die for our sakes.
Our sakes? His son? I do not understand.
Pawn looked at Aaron while Holrock grunted again, and Aaron hesitated. The story of Jesus was on her lips. It wasn't what Pawn wanted. It wasn't the story that could help him figure out who the Antinium were. But it was a good story. Perhaps it was only a story. Maybe it wasn't. Aaron didn't know. She didn't believe. Not anymore. But she'd heard the same stories over and over, and she could repeat them to her listeners.
Just listen, okay? It gets complicated. But I guess one day, long after Moses had saved the Hebrews, they were suffering in another land, this time under the Romans. And God knew they were in trouble, but he was sort of looking at the entire world, you know? And everywhere he looked, he saw sin. So he decided to do something about it. So he looked for good people, Mary of Nazareth and her husband, Joseph of Nazareth, and chose them to raise his son, who he would send down from heaven.
Heaven?
Pawn interrupted Aaron. He looked at her intently.
What is heaven? I know of hell, but I have never heard of heaven.
Aaron wavered.
Wait a second. How can you know of hell and not heaven? What's hell over here?
Holrock was the one to answer. He fiddled with his mug.
Hell is where the demons come from. In Rhea, there is a place where no army is returned. That is what people call hell. Is that what you mean?
Aaron frowned.
No. Hell is more like, well, it's a place you go when you die, not a location.
Pawn and Hallrock both looked at each other, and then away. Hallrock scowled. Erin shook her head.
Hell isn't a place. I mean, not a place on Earth. Not in this world. It's the afterlife, the place where bad people go when they die. We go to hell because we sin. We suffer in life because we sin. That's what the Bible says anyways.
Bible?
The history of all this, I guess. I mean, the history of the Hebrews and their God.
Oh, and heaven?
How could you describe heaven to someone? Erin closed her eyes. She looked at the ceiling and did her best.
Heaven is a place where good people go. It's a place where there's no pain, no suffering. Everyone's there. You can see your family, your friends, and everything is happy, forever. That's what heaven is, I think.
When she looked back down, Hallrock and Pawn were staring at her.
What? Don't you believe in life after death?
Hallrock shook his head slowly.
When I was a lad, I was taught that we'd come back to life after we died. It depended on our class and our level. The higher level we were, the better life we'd have. If we didn't do much and died with low levels, we'd come back as animals, or worse, monsters. But that's all.
And you, Pawn?
He was silent for a few minutes.
The Antinium know of nothing after death, but we do know of death. When an Antinium dies, their memory remains in the hive, but of the Antinium themselves, nothing. Only a few are apt to return to the hive in times of need. K'ilpch is one such, but even they fade, and in time all Antinium will die, and after that...
He looked at Erin.
They cease to be. That is what happens after the Antinium die.
She stared at him.
That's not what some humans believe. They think everyone can go to heaven if they believe.
Everyone? Even an Antinium?
I guess so. But let me finish my story. You see, God was sad because we were all sinning, doing bad things. So he sent his son to die for our sakes. Because if he did, all our sins would be forgiven.
Hallrock eyed Erin.
Like some kind of blood ritual? Magic?
No. Redemption. No magic. No ritual. Just forgiveness. It would be a second chance for all of us.
A second chance? To do what?
Erin paused.
Anything.
And Pawn looked at her, silently, with the same grave, emotionless expression that all the Antinium shared. But there was a spark in his dark eyes, a glimmer of something. Hope. So Erin took a deep breath and reached back. She reached back to childhood, to youth, to innocence and faith, and she told them stories. She told them of a son who died upon a cross to save the world, of a God who created everything and gave law to the lawless. She told the listening adventurer and Antinium parables, stories, and tales of miracles and deliverance. At some point, Olesim knocked his chair over across the room and ran out the door with Saria and Zavara in hot pursuit. But no one paid any attention. Erin told stories to the listening man, full of skepticism and bitterness, and to the Antinium, lost, afraid, and alone. And they listened. It was not an immortal moment. There was nothing immortal in the way Erin would backtrack or make mistakes or get up and serve another round of drinks. Perhaps because she did not believe. But there was something there. something which captured the heart and made Pawn listen, and Hallrock stay, and it continued into the night, whispering to the three. Stories, faith, religion. The inn was quiet when Erin finally locked her door and her last guest vanished into the snowy night. Olesum had fled long ago and not come back, and neither had Saria or Zavara. But Hallrock and Pawn had stayed until past midnight, listening to Erin. The adventurer had gone first, with generous tips for Erin multiplied several times over the normal rate. He'd ignored all her protests and insisted on it. Hallrock had left after filling his water flask to the brim with Erin's fairy flower drink, but he'd walked back towards Lascore without touching it. Instead, he'd stared up at the sky as the gold-ranked adventurer slowly walked back through the snow. Pawn looked up, too, as he made his way back towards the city. He saw only stars and the twin moons overhead. Nothing he hadn't seen 100 times before. But how many times had Pawn actually looked up at the sky? When he thought about it, it was more than likely he'd looked up less than 100 times, and he had never paid attention to the shining stars. They had simply been objects, irrelevant parts of his world. But now, Pawn looked up and wondered what lay beyond the stars in the sky. He looked up and wondered if out there, somewhere, there was a place where he could go, a place for the lost like him, a place to be saved. As he looked up, Pawn felt something in his chest. It was desire, a yearning that came so strongly that the Antinium shuddered. He had never felt such a want in his life, but how it came over him, a fierce desire for something he didn't have. Sin. Hell, slavery, betrayal. Erin's stories stuck in the Antinium's mind, whispering to him, speaking into his heart. Redemption, salvation, rebirth, resurrection, the forgiveness of sins. His only son, and heaven. It was just for a second. It was only a hope. The small desire of one who had never known he wanted it. But for one moment, Pawn wished it were all true. And in that moment, he believed. And as he looked up, the Antinium heard the whisper. It came out of his heart, and then Pawn heard the voice in his mind.
Acolyte class obtained. Acolyte, level 1. Skill, prayer obtained.
It struck the Antinium from above, and he fell to his knees in the snow and the night. He stared up and knew. The night sky hung overhead, silent, distant, but no longer simply the sky. Now there was something behind it, something made of dreams and hope and belief, but something, nevertheless. Pawn believed, and he hoped, and that was enough. It was enough to dream of salvation. And then, there were gods, or at least one.